sooner or later, you can bet your life that every Jew in this building is going to say the same thing. He's a little too Jewish for my taste.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Andrew Rehfeld, the president of the Hebrew Union College Jewish Institute of Religion. We'll also have a visit from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. You know, normally this time of year, we're preparing to send our children or even grandchildren off to Jewish camp for the summer. This year, however, things are very, very different. Nearly every single Jewish summer camp has decided it won't be able to open this year since the concerns about coronavirus and COVID-19 infection preclude the sort of hands-on, close-quarters experiences that summer camp demands. You can't exactly hold a friendship circle while social distancing, and it's pretty hard to quarantine young kids from one another while they are singing, dancing, playing sports, doing arts and crafts and other close-quarters activities, let alone sleeping in bunks that hold 8 or 10 or even 12 kids. As much as our hearts ache for the graduates of college, high school, middle school, and elementary school, whose celebrations were postponed or held on Zoom or Facebook or Instagram, we might feel even a little bit worse for those kids who can't spend the summer in an embracing Jewish living environment, like the camps we attended as children, or the ones I sent my own kids to for years. One of my sons was a camp counselor as recently as last summer. There's nothing like the friendships formed and lifelong connections forged at summer camp to carry young people through the bad times they experience in adolescence, and to enrich their Jewish identity. All Jewish children should attend Hebrew school and religious school, and if possible, Jewish day school. They should participate in Jewish youth groups at their synagogues, and most importantly, they ought to have the experience of Shabbat at home weekly, and of celebrating the wonderful Jewish holidays in their seasons. But there is nothing quite like enjoying an immersive Jewish experience like camp. Praying with other kids, singing with children their own age, enjoying a camp Shabbat like it can only be celebrated in the beautiful outdoors with friends made over a wonderful summer, or over a number of such beautiful summers. When being Jewish is normalized in the way that only summer camp can do, it helps make being Jewish in a non-Jewish country like America so much easier and more positive for kids. Judaism is fun at camp in a way that's very difficult to recreate in other Jewish settings. Studies have long proven the value of Jewish summer camps in forging Jewish identities and creating positive associations with Jewish values, with Israel, with Jewish community. And not having camp available for a whole summer, which means a gap of almost 2 years for children who grow and change so fast, is rough. That's a gap that will have an unfortunate impact, I'm afraid, for years to come. Now, I don't agree with all the doomsday predictors who say that COVID-19 cancellations will be the end of all Jewish summer camp in America. I'm quite certain the Jewish camps will bounce back next summer and soon rise to their pre-pandemic levels. I just wish that so many of our Jewish kids weren't going to experience a kind of stolen or lost summer. Not to mention the fact that their parents now have them full time all summer with no real breaks. That might be challenging indeed for some of us. Anyway, to play us in this morning as a sweet and this time sad memory of summer camps in days gone by, here's the late great Alan Sherman's classic ode to summer camp, Hello Mudda, Hello Fada.
Hello Mudda, Hello Fada. Here I am at Camp Granada. Camp is very entertaining, and they say we'll have some fun if it stops raining. I went hiking with Joe Spivey. He developed poison ivy. You remember Leonard Skinner? He got ptomaine poisoning last night after dinner. All the counselors hate the waiters, and the lake has alligators, and the head coach wants no sissies, so he reads to us from something called Ulysses. Now I don't want, this should scare you, but my bunkmate has malaria. You remember Jeffrey Hardy? They're about to organize a searching party. Take me home, oh Marafada, take me home. I hate Granada, don't leave me out in the forest where I might get eaten by a bear. Take me home, I promise I will not make noise or mess the house with other boys. Oh, please don't make me stay, I've been here one whole day. Dearest Fada, darling Mada, how's my precious little brother? Let me come home if you miss me. I would even let Aunt Bertha hug and kiss me. Wait a minute, it stopped hailing. Guys are swimming, guys are sailing, playing baseball, gee, that's better. Marafada, kindly disregard this letter.
That was Alan Sherman's Hello Mudda, Hello Fada for all those who can't go to summer camp this summer. We hope and pray that Jewish summer camps will all be back in 2021. As they used to say in Brooklyn about the Dodgers, wait till next year. Actually, I hope they don't say that about the L.A. Dodgers this year. Well, that's a totally different, if similarly tragic, subject. Baseball cancellations due to coronavirus. Another show, perhaps. Anyway, when we return in a moment here on Too Jewish, Andrew Rehfeld, the president of Hebrew Union College, the Jewish Institute of Religion, will explore the future direction of the Reform Rabbinate and much else. All when we return in a moment here on Too Jewish.
There's magic in the air at this special place for fun. A place where fortune smiles and Tucson comes alive. This is Casino del Sol. The best games in town. Amazing dining and top-flight entertainment. This is a heart that beats with excitement, with passion and beauty. It's all waiting for you at Casino del Sol. This is the soul of Tucson. Presenting sponsor of University of Arizona Basketball, Enterprise of the Pasquayaki Tribe.
Congregation Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, a new Jewish synagogue in northwest Tucson in the Catalina foothills, celebrates a great array of services, classes, and events this spring. Established by passionate, caring congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha has already created a vibrant, vital community that strives every day to serve God with joy. A new progressive congregation in northwest Tucson and the foothills, Beit Simcha is open to everyone throughout the metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services, youth and adult education academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming. Beit Simcha's synagogue is located at 2270 West Ina Road, just west of La Cholla, near the entrance to the Foothills Mall. Services, classes, and events are open to everyone during normal times. In these days of coronavirus tsaros, join us every Friday night on our Facebook page for Shabbat evening celebration services at 6:30 p.m. on Facebook Live. Saturday morning, Shabbat morning services at 10 a.m., all usually with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, leading them. While I'm out for a little bit, Rabbi Baruch Kohan will be leading them, my 94-year-old dad, with a lot of help. Our Facebook page is Beit Simcha Tucson, Beit Simcha Tucson. We'll have services with full music by virtual experience weekly there. All of our adult education classes are on Zoom, which you can access by emailing me at rabbi@beitsimchatucson.org, R-E-B-B-I at B-E-I-T-S-I-M-C-H-A, rabbi@beitsimchatucson.org. Synagogue.org. Synagogue's at 2270 West Ina Road, west of La Cholla, on the north side of Ina, at the entrance to the Foothills Mall property. We're not in the mall, but on the south side, in our very own building. And for now, we're a fully functioning virtual congregation on Zoom and Facebook. Please email me at rabbi@beitsimchatucson.org for more information, or go to our website to find out more about Beit Simcha, to attend services, our great religious school and Torah Tikes program, bar and bat mitzvah, confirmation and high school programs, and rich array of adult education academy courses, all on Zoom, and our services on Facebook, BeitSimchaTucson.org, www.BeitSimchaTucson.org, or call 520-276-5675. That's 276-5675. BeitSimchaTucson.org. Join me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, in the newest and fastest growing Jewish community and synagogue in all of Southern Arizona in its exciting beginning years. We are delighted to welcome the two Jewish our guests this morning. Andrew Rehfeld is the 10th president of Hebrew Union College Jewish Institute of Religion, a political scientist by training and a distinguished communal leader in St. Louis and elsewhere. He took the helm of HUCJIR, the Signal Seminary for the Reform Movement, just last year, replacing the interim president, who was Chancellor David Ellenson, who had returned to the job after the tragic death of Aaron Penkin, both of them past guests of Two Jewish.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
So this is quite a job at quite a weird time, isn't it?
It really is. I mean, just what you said, coming in after the tragic loss of Rabbi Penkin, a blessed memory, who had left such a terrific legacy in the short time he was here. But just being able to step in and helping people still grieve the loss of a friend and a teacher, and then to follow it up a year later with the onset of coronavirus, it's been an extraordinary ride, and I think we have a lot of challenges ahead.
HUC ordains Reform rabbis and has done so, is the first formal seminary in America to do so. It's a different time for people to become rabbis. There's lots of other ways that people become rabbis. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, I think it speaks to the vibrancy of religiously progressive Judaism in North America, and something that the Reform Movement really led on. And today you're seeing weakening of denominational boundaries and the starting of a number of seminaries that are offering lots of opportunities for people to explore. That makes our work more competitive. But I'm a believer in free markets, and I think the competition will ultimately drive excellence. The bigger challenge has to do with really the numbers of people choosing to go into the rabbinate, and we are collectively seeing that number declining by about 30% over even the last 15 years. There's a total number of individuals entering non-Orthodox seminaries has been reduced from about 100 a year to now about 70. HUC maintains its role as the market leader, but we are all declining, and in terms of numbers of students, and that's a challenge that that we need to face directly head on.
There's always a bit of a prophetic emphasis in this. You're looking at least 5 years ahead in terms of people entering seminary. It's essentially a 5-year program, can be 6 years. Some people do it in a little bit shorter time. How do you look that far ahead? I mean, 15 years is a reasonable sample. What do you see 5 or 6 years down the road?
Well, first of all, you start with the need that's there. We have an entire generation of rabbis that will be retiring from congregational roles, and most, if not all, will need to be replaced with talented, skilled, dynamic leaders. Number two, you have to recognize that part of our challenge is that the pipelines from which all of us have been drawing students have been drying up and decreasing along the lines with the trends of North American Judaism. That is, as Jewish communities in North America are weakening in terms of education, engagement, identity, the number of people wanting to go into the field has been declining. And along with both of those is the profound impact that our rabbis, our Clay Kodesh, our Jewish professionals generally are having to transform communities, transform the world, really profound impacts and inspiring things they're doing every day. you add up those three things, the potential for change, the need of the market is changing, as well as the changed pipelines, the decreased number, the drying up, I use the term, for the pipeline.
Right.
And I think what it suggests is a different kind of strategy, a strategy that recognizes the people that may not have thought about being rabbis until later in their lives, whether in college or after college or even mid-career. We need a more comprehensive strategy to reach out to them and to develop their capability, the potential, and education to serve the Jewish people and the world.
We will discuss those questions and much more with Andrew Rehfeld, the president of Hebrew Union College Jewish Institute of Religion, including what kind of a job is being a rabbi for a good Jewish boy or girl, when we come back here on Too Jewish. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or a kvel, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com. That's TOOJewishRadio18@gmail. Or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website, streaming us from there or downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcast, top 10 in North America, according to Moment magazine. We now welcome back a randomly occurring feature of Too Jewish, our Zen Judaism segment, koans of wisdom about our journey. Be patient and achieve all things. Be impatient and achieve all things faster. Zen is not easy. It takes effort to attain nothingness. And then what do you have? Bobkus. That was Zen Judaism, koans of wisdom, here on Too Jewish. We're in a musical mood this morning, and a revised version of a musical about Jewish immigration to America called Rags that was revived earlier this year on London's East End with lyrics by recent past guest Stephen Schwartz, music by Charles Strauss, who wrote the show Annie. Their song is called Children of the Wind, and you can hear it now.
Empty rooms, once loud and crowded, now just standing by. All the mixed up memories, times to dance and cry. Sometimes we don't love things till we tell them goodbye. My first home here, my home here, goodbye. We're children of the wind, blown across the earth, pieces of the heart, scattered worlds apart, so far from those we love. All the children of the wind. There's a morning I want someday to see. All the children of my children are there, and they're very, very noisy, running through my kitchen. And we've been there for a lifetime, and I'll know then they will never be.
That was the song Children of the Wind from the musical about Jewish immigration to America a century and more ago by Stephen Schwartz and Charles Strauss. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Tom, we were just talking before we came on here about an article you just saw about a very interesting place, Hamburg, but it doesn't really stop there. It just kind of starts there.
It doesn't even start there, actually. It starts with a friend in Sarajevo sent me this. And as you know, I have a lot of Jewish friends throughout the Balkans from my old days with the World Union of Jewish Students. And many of them are multilingual. They speak French, English, Hebrew, Ladino in many cases, and whatever the native language of their respective country is, be it Bosnia or Greece. So this story featured, and this was like what the clickbait part, a tombstone in an unspecified place, but it was obviously a Jewish cemetery because one side of the tombstone was written in Hebrew and the other side was written in Ladino. And it turns out that the cemetery was in Hamburg, Germany. But the thing that was so surprising to see at the top of the gravestone was a classic skull and crossbones, like the pirate's flag.
Like Pirates of the Caribbean.
Exactly. Right. So it turns out, and I'll just, actually, because it'll be quicker, I'll just read this story to you. Let's begin with the content. This ancient stone contains the bracha that Jews say upon entering a cemetery. On the right-hand side, we find the bracha inscribed in Hebrew, while on the left, we read its exact translation in Old Spanish, i.e. Ladino. The inscriptions are framed on both sides by straight lines, blah, 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 blah. Above the bilingual inscription, we have the image of the skull and two crossed bones underneath, recognized universally as the emblem used by the Pirates of the Caribbean. So what does a Jewish cemetery prayer have to do with pirates? My historical research revealed that the skull and crossbones were a common feature in Sephardic cemeteries. They embody the belief in Tchiyat HaMetim, the revival of the dead at the end of days, and in the prophecy of Ezekiel about the dry bones. After the expulsion from Spain in 1492, Jews took that custom with them to cemeteries in other parts of the diaspora. During the 16th and 17th centuries, some Spanish Jews settled in Caribbean islands, such as St. Thomas, Barbados, Curacao, and others. Early in the 18th century, some pirates, possibly the famous Blackbeard, saw that symbol and found it appropriate to appropriate it as their flag. The photo shown was taken while visiting with a group at the Old Jewish Cemetery in Hamburg, Germany. The Hamburg Jewish community is considered 100% Ashkenazic. The community in that northern German city was actually founded in the late 16th century by Spanish-Portuguese Jews. They built the cemetery and installed the stone tablets according to their ancient customs. So I just find that fascinating.
Well, it's really great. I mean, partly it makes sense. Hamburg, of course, major, major port.
Right.
And the Sephardic Jews, when they were expelled from Spain, tended to settle in port cities, whether it was Amsterdam or, in this case, Hamburg. And so, but it's fascinating to think that the famous Jolly Roger actually came from a Sephardic tombstone recognizing the notion of the resurrection of the dead at the end of days.
Right. And apparently it's a custom that far predated the rise of piracy in the Caribbean.
Right, and the Spanish Main and all of that stuff. And it's kind of fun to think that the people who were raiding the Spanish ships of the country that expelled the Jews were actually flying a flag that reminded them of, should have reminded somebody of the Sephardic Jews that were expelled in the first place. Not to mention there were some Jewish pirates like Jean Lafitte who came from that Sephardic background. Thanks so much, Tom. We'll talk next week.
I look forward to it.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week, Jewish humor your bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. As we have all done at some time, Moshe locks himself out of his car on a hot summer day, but he manages to find a wire coat hanger in a nearby garbage can, goes back to the car to try to open the lock. As soon as he shoves the wire through that little space at the top of the window, his wife Sadie starts telling him what to do. Moshe, moving more to the right. No, more to the left. Higher. Lower. Finally, Sadie says, "What's taking you so long, Moshe?" And Moshe replies, "Sadie, it's so easy for you, sitting inside an air-conditioned car. That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Two Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well and stay out of the air. No, stay inside the air condition. Nah, never mind. And now a word of Torah. This week we chant the second portion of the book of Numbers called Naso, which includes a remarkable blessing. The Birkat Kohanim, the priestly blessing, is really three distinct brachot, three separate prayers, with which the ancient priests are commanded to bless the people. From its inception, this three-part blessing had exceptional importance. As the Torah quotes God saying, "With this blessing you will place my name on the people of Israel, v'samu et shemi al b'nei Yisrael." That is, this very blessing conveys God's presence among us and offers God's protection. The blessing was given by the Kohanim, the highest class of priests, those entrusted with the service of the tabernacle and temple. We still use it at every joyous life cycle event. It remains powerful. The text is, "May God bless you and guard you. May the light of God's presence shine on you and be gracious to you. May God's presence turn to you and grant you peace." In essence, the Birkat Kohanim asks God to supply our most important needs. The majority of the interpretations of this portion see the first blessing requesting physical safety and health. Never more appropriate than now, is it? The second part asks for our material needs to be satisfied, while the third blessing seeks spiritual comfort, confidence. Without any one of these blessings, our lives become a serious challenge. With all three of them, we are assured of true quality of life. After thousands of years, those three elements, safety, grace, and peace, remain central to our lives and a true gift from God. May you be blessed with each of these, with all of these, this week and always. When we return on To Jewish, our guest, Andrew Rehfeld, the president of Hebrew Union College, will explain what it's like to be the first non-rabbi to head that venerable institution of American Judaism and explore what directions he sees for the future of rabbis, cantors, and educators in American Reform Jewish life. Find out when we return on To Jewish in just a moment.
We continue with our To Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
In a rare piece of good Jewish news, Sweden's only Jewish overnight camp has reversed its decision to be closed this summer. Glamsta, a 111-year-old summer camp located in Stockholm's archipelago, said last month it was nixing its 2020 sessions due to the coronavirus pandemic. But last week, Stockholm's Jewish community said it would allow a smaller group of kids to participate this summer, following new guidelines from the Swedish government. Kids living in Stockholm, born in 2005 and later, will be allowed to do a sleepaway session, as they are the last age group that would be allowed to participate in the camp. The total number of campers and staffers will not be more than 50 people, the maximum allowed by the Swedish government. Those campers represent a fraction of the 370 kids who signed up to participate this summer. Stockholm's Jewish community, which runs Glamsta, is also offering a day camp for kids who live in Stockholm. The camp plays an integral role in Sweden's small Jewish community of about 15,000 people. For many children, especially those living outside Stockholm, it's the only time of year they're surrounded by other young Jews and learn about their heritage. Many Jewish institutions in Sweden have been closed since mid-March, kind of like here, though the country as a whole has taken a lax approach to combating coronavirus by allowing most businesses to stay open. Dozens, well, more than that probably by now, of Jewish summer camps in the U.S., including the URJ camps and virtually all the Ramah camps, have nixed sessions this summer due to COVID-19. And the Satmar Hasidim, notorious for being in shows like Unorthodox, are in the news again, not for good reasons. A school in the Satmar Hasidic village of Kiryas Yoel in New York was ordered to close after it was found operating with hundreds of students in its building, in clear violation of COVID-19 orders in force in New York State. New York's Orange County said that officials visiting the school last week found what appeared to be hundreds of students inside, not wearing personal protective equipment, not social distancing, and plainly in violation of the governor's executive orders. The county health department issued a cease and desist order to the school the following day. In March, the state of New York issued an order mandating the closure of all schools to prevent the spread of COVID-19, an order that remains in effect as of airtime. If the school continues to operate in Kiryasioel, officials said it could face criminal prosecution, including criminal negligence for individuals. Ron Coleman, an attorney for the United Talmudical Academy system run by the Satmar, said the school is not operating as a school, but administrators, it allowed the boys to study independently in the building, which school officials believed was permitted under the state executive order. Chris Erickson, a deputy county health commissioner who visited the school, said that the classrooms were full, teachers were in the rooms, and few wore masks. The United Talmudical Academy is a Satmar Hasidic school system for about 14,500 children in and around Kiryas Yoel.
So kiss me and smile for me. Tell me that you'll wait for me. Hold me like you'll never let me go. I'm leaving on a jet plane. I don't.
Commercial flights will not resume to Israel until mid-July at the earliest, according to the head of Ben-Gurion Airport. Shmuel Zakaim, the airport's managing director, said that even when the flights eventually restart, the number of departing planes will remain very low. Social distancing regulations at airports won't allow us to increase passenger capacity, Zakai said. If we keep up at this pace, we'll see a few dozen flights departing from Ben-Gurion Airport starting mid-July, but not earlier. As long as there is no vaccine for coronavirus and the disease keeps moving across countries, there will be no significant change. The new regulations require travelers to arrive 4 hours early for a flight, at which time they'll receive a temperature check, wear face masks, and remain social distanced in waiting areas. They will not be allowed to have any non-travelers accompany them. Senior health ministry officials in Israel visited the airport last week to review plans for reopening some commercial travel, though no concrete plans or dates were set.
We're kosher and have to answer to an even higher authority.
And even in the midst of the coronavirus pandemic, kosher meat goes on. Argentina will charter a private plane to bring several Israeli rabbis to certify kosher meat in the country. Argentina has banned commercial flights to stem the spread of coronavirus, but the allowance for the rabbis indicates the importance of the Israeli export market for the country's beef. Argentina is the world's fifth largest beef exporter, Israel its third largest buyer at over $100 million annually, according to Mario Ravatino, head of Argentina's ABC Meat Export Consortium. During normal times, up to 15 Israeli rabbis travel to Argentina twice a year and stay for a few months. Since there aren't enough local rabbis with expertise in shechita, kosher slaughter, to handle the volume. Argentina currently allows only citizens to enter the country, except for shochets, apparently, because they answer to an even higher authority.
Wonder of wonders, miracle of miracles, God took a Daniel once again, stood by his side, and miracle of miracles, walked him through the lion's den. Wonder of wonders, miracle of miracles, I was afraid that God would frown, but like he did so long ago in Jericho, God just made a wall fall down. When Moses softened Pharaoh's heart, that was a miracle. When God made the waters of the Red Sea part, that was a miracle too. But of all God's miracles, large and small, the most miraculous one of all is that out of a worthless lump of clay, God has made a man today. Wonder of wonders, miracle of miracles, God took a tailor by the hand, turned him around, and miracle of miracles, led him to the promised land. When David slew Goliath, yes, that was a miracle. When God gave us manna in the wilderness, that was a miracle too. But of all God's miracles, large and small, the most miraculous one of all is the one I thought could never be. God has given you to me.
Wonder of Wonders, Fiddler on the Roof is returning to the big screen. MGM is producing a remake of the iconic 1964 Broadway musical about the struggles and joys of Jewish life in the fictional Eastern European shtetl of Anatevka. The new film brings some star power from Broadway. Director Thomas Kail served in the same role for Hamilton and has collaborated with its creator, Lin-Manuel Miranda, famously a Fiddler fan who had it played at his wedding. He actually did a little bit of To Life L'Chaim. Anyway, he's collaborated with Miranda on other shows. Stephen Levinson, the Jewish playwright who wrote the acclaimed musical Dear Evan Hansen, will pen the screenplay. The remake will be carrying on a tradition of more than 50 years. Fiddler first had audiences saying L'Chaim when it opened on Broadway in 1964, starring Zero Mostel as Tevye. It won 9 Tonys. It saw many sunrises and sunsets, at one time holding the record for longest-running Broadway musical at nearly 10 years. The movie version came out in 1971 and garnered 3 Oscars, as well as nominations for Best Actor for Topol and for Best Picture. Broadway brought back another revival in 2015, and a Yiddish-language Fiddler ran off Broadway until earlier this year. And now that tradition will be reaffirmed on the big screen in about a year or so. A blessing on your head, Mazel Tov. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews Round the World. We are delighted to welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning. Andrew Rehfeld is the 10th president of Hebrew Union College Jewish Institute of Religion, a political scientist by training, that is, not a rabbi. Tell us a little bit about assuming the helm of the Signal Rabbinical Training Institute, obviously also trained cantors and educators and Jewish professionals. What's it like taking on that role, not being a rabbi?
Well, I'll just tell you that every day that I walk into the building, when I used to walk into the building before coronavirus, I was really just, I was just struck and humbled by the legacy that is upon my shoulders, the 9 individuals that served in this place before me, and the other 5 or 6 who stepped in on an interim basis have left a profound legacy. So forget about the rabbi or the not rabbi, simply continuing that legacy, the shoes that are so big that you have to fill. And then in my case, as you said at the very introduction, filling the shoes of Rabbi Aaron Pankin of blessed memory. These aren't just shoes that I have to fill. They're shoes that are literally mid-stride. And so I begin with that, rabbi or no rabbi, and then you add another layer that most people see HUC as simply a seminary, and I understand why it's so dramatic that you have a non-rabbi if that's your view of HUC. But actually, HUC has been much more than just a rabbinical school for decades. It trains Jewish cantors, it trains Jewish educators, it trains Jewish nonprofit professionals. We have a graduate school on the Cincinnati campus that we give out the PhD and master's degrees. And we run the Jewish studies program of the University of Southern California, something called the Lockheim School. So if you're, and that's between 500 and 1,000 undergraduate students that we teach in our classes as part of that program. So when you put that all into context, you're talking about a multidiscipline institution of Jewish professional education, Jewish studies, Jewish professional communal service, as well as the seminary work. And in that context, I would just say as a political scientist, number one, I've got a lot to learn about all of this. I did serve as a Jewish communal professional, as the CEO of the Jewish Federation of St. Louis for almost 7 years. So I have experience as well as being a lay leader. But here, I think people sell HUC short when you say, well, how can you be a non-rabbi and be the head of HUC? When you understand its complexity, I'd ask you to reflect on any major institution of higher education. One of my alma maters, the University of Chicago, has a president that's an accomplished mathematician. Now, when he took the role as an accomplished mathematician of the presidency of the University of Chicago, no one said to him, well, you're not a doctor, how are you going to run the medical school? You're not a lawyer, how are you going to run the law school? You're not a business person, how are you going to run the business school? And that's because I understand that the president of an institution has to make sure that those schools are run at a level of excellence without micromanaging or presuming or having the arrogance that they know what the best curriculum is or how to train each of those areas. I view HUC in much the same way, and I think that having a more capacious and bold view of what the institution is can help understand why I think the search committee and why I felt comfortable that I would have a shot at actually doing this successfully. I'm not here to run the rabbinical curriculum. We have exceptional leaders to do that. We have a provost, Rabbi Andrea Weiss, who's innovative in her thinking about rabbinical training. Lisa Grant, Jonathan Heck, Jan Katsu, and Deborah Weisberg, all of whom are involved in rabbinical education on our campuses. These are the people driving the seminary side of it. Cantor Richard Cohn, leading the Debbie Friedman School of Sacred Music. We are a complex institution. Admittedly, it hasn't been perceived that way, and that's where I think you get into this sort of, oh my gosh, there's a non-rabbi at the head of a seminary. Well, put it this way. There's been a non-cantor in the head of this cantorial school for years. There's been a non-educator, the head of the education. There's been a non-Jewish communal servant. You get the point.
I not only get the point, I'm also a cantor, so I always wondered about that part of it.
I will tell you that the interesting thing to me is not that rabbis felt the way that they did, that they felt a diminution of their status because you no longer have it in the president. Rather than an elevation of what it means about the strength and the dynamism of the institution, I had cantors, I had Jewish communal servants reach out to me that are graduates of our program saying that they were so offended by the reaction because of what it meant, that if a rabbi couldn't see anyone but themselves leading HUC, what did that mean that it was okay for the Jewish communal service program to be run by a non-Jewish communal service person, et cetera.
I want to jump around a little bit. You mentioned the complexity of HUCJR. It is complicated. There are four campuses in two countries serving a variety of programs with, as you noted, fewer applicants, fewer students. How do you respond to people that say, gosh, there's just, you know, why don't they condense things? Because that's an argument that's been made for 30 years.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So first of all, our total student body, not including our undergraduates, is around 350 students. That includes all the programs all in. Now, four locations may still be too many, but it's not just the rabbinical school that we're operating. In terms of the infrastructure, look, I think the truth is that we have more infrastructure than we would if we were starting anew today. The truth is that we have been responding to a lot of changing currents in the 21st century, and we're in the process of a strategic planning, we're in that strategic planning process right now. At the end of it, we first have to ask, what is it we do? What do we do well? What can we do at a level of excellence? And only then can we ask, and should we ask, what kind of infrastructure do we need to support what we do? The multiple locations that we have to do our work ensures that we are addressing the entirety of North American Jewry and that we're driving the development of reform and religiously progressive Judaism within Israel. And I think that we're going to be committed to doing both of those, no matter if we have one campus or 10 campuses. And the campus question really has to follow from what we're doing right now, strategic visioning of what we want to be for the next 5 or 10 years, and it'll follow. And look, we're going to have to make some hard choices. The coronavirus is straining all of us in terms of infrastructure, and we can't keep doing, none of us can, keep doing the same things we've always done in the same way.
Among your incredibly diverse array of previous experiences and accomplishments, I mean, you were a Kutz Camp song leader, served at URJ Olin Sang Ruby, you spent a year in Israel, you're on Leave Note, Ohiba Note early on, involved with NIFTY, you were a confirmation teacher, youth coordinator, youth group coordinator. You also served in something a little bit close to my heart, the ethics program, the Ethics Center at Cincinnati. Tell us a little bit about that involvement, just for kicks.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Started, by the way, with by a mentor of mine, Barry Kogan, a long time ago. So go ahead, anyway.
Wow, I'd love to hear your experience with that. You know, were you involved with the Ethics Center?
He was my thesis advisor, and I was involved in some putting on some of the programs when I was a student. So a while back.
So this got started because it was either in 2014 or 15, maybe 2016, Rabbi Jonathan Cohen, who was then the dean of our Cincinnati campus, was in St. Louis and, you know, trying to look for supporters for HUC, and we met in my office. He discovered I was an academic and that this was my field. I did political theory that touched significantly on ethical issues, and he invited me to be a part. So I joined a seminar that met. There were probably five or six of us researchers once every 3 weeks or so, and I wound up giving a paper on campus in Cincinnati. I think that was in 2016. It was a great opportunity to be in dialogue with academics, with rabbis, with Jewish, with graduate students from HUC. And that was my first mature, deep engagement with HUC and saw the vibrancy of what's happening on the campus. Well, the topics that we addressed were one of Jewish community and what community means at the time. And, you know, Rabbi Cohen, he's now the rabbi up in Cleveland. He's a gifted academic. He's a gifted rabbi, and you know, bringing together these diverse strands to talk about what community means today was really it was a great experience for me.
HUC, as you noted, faces significant challenges. Some of those are funding challenges, which we're all facing. The whole nonprofit world, but certainly the Reform Jewish world. How do you see your role in that aspect of the position in terms of development? Are there areas that need to be addressed? Is that a big part of what you do?
It has to be the big part of what any university or college president does. And it's about securing resources to sustain the institution. But I would say that really the mission is to sustain the institution to make sure we're hitting it at a level of excellence. So before you can go out to really make the case for giving and develop it, particularly at this moment when we are facing so much change in 21st century Judaism and so much change because of the coronavirus, you have to have clarity on what you do and make sure that you are doing it in a way that you know what you need to be able to make a case for. And that's why we're engaged in this strategic planning process. But yeah, it's a big part of my job, and it has to be, because the work that we do is too essential to the world for this not to be a core piece of what any president does.
So without overly focusing on rabbinic recruitment, how important is it that HUC add to the number of students that it's bringing in, since you brought that up early on?
I think it's very important, and I think that it's important in terms, not only in terms of maintaining as well as expanding the quality of our students, but maintaining and expanding the diversity of our student body in ways that we haven't yet really begun to talk about. I mean, one way has to do with Jews of color. We need to make sure that we are providing a welcoming platform for Jews of any kind. And to that end, we've started an internal review and audit of how we do what we do to create safe and respectful workplaces. We also need to diversify in the places that we're drawing students from. I spoke before about pipelines. You know, the old pipeline of you go to Kutz Camp or URJ, Olin Sang Ruby, which is where I was on faculty from, you develop relationships, you serve on and staff, and then you get recruited by someone like Rabbi Gary Zola, who is the luminary, you know, in the world of the Reform movement.
Yep, an old friend, a past guest of Two Jewish, I might add.
He's exceptional. He's an exceptional human being, so scholarly, so Hamisha, and just such warmth and dedication to our work. That's okay, except for the challenge that it limits who you're looking for to a narrower and narrower group of people. And I believe in addition to continuing that work and doing it at a level of excellence, we need to be branching out. we need to be looking at, if you look at 21st century Judaism, where fewer and fewer people are staying engaged in institutional forms for many, many years, they get to college and they hit their junior year and they say, what do I want to do? Many of them fall into careers of going to med school or law school or social work school because they want a high-status profession that nevertheless is one of service. Well, these are people that might have a year of birthright. They may have a positive Jewish identity. They may have a year or two of summer camp, but they never really thought of the rabbinate or the Jewish communal professional world as where they want to invest and make a mark to change the world today. And that's the market that we need to be in, to identify those students and begin to say, you know what, I know you don't have the traditional background that people in the past have come to HUC with, but you are a dynamic, a bold, super smart, super gifted individual. We want to help you envision what that life would be. And to develop those pipelines, to identify the pipelines, to develop the extraction strategy from the pipeline, use the oil well.
Extraction strategy. That's it. I've never heard that applied to rabbis before, but it's fascinating.
And then also, how do you prime the pump? How do you create the high school and college leadership programs for people, again, that don't, you or J-Camps, for example, do a wonderful job of developing people through from childhood all the way up to through high school. But if you're a kid that hasn't had a rich Jewish experience and you want to start in high school, to join a camp that has layers and layers of history and years behind it is not going to be a winning formula. So how do we create dedicated high school learning programs? I just saw Yale was doing one for 2 weeks. High quality, maybe offer some college credit around it for high school students. How do we offer a college semester experiences using our multiple campuses as a way of deepening Jewish education, deepening Jewish engagement, deepening and building Jewish identity, and by the way, growing pipeline to the future for Jewish professional leadership and Jewish professional service in the rabbinate, the cantonate, the education world, et cetera.
I want to thank President Andrew Rehfeld of Hebrew Union College Jewish Institute of Religion for a great visit here on Two Jewish. I feel like we could go on for hours, only we don't have any more time.
Well, I'm so grateful for the opportunity and for the work you're doing to change the trajectory of Jewish life. Engagement, education, identity is just fantastic.
Thank you so much, and I hope we meet in person soon. I hope anybody can meet anybody in person soon. Where can people go to find out more about HUC? Is it huc.edu the best place?
That's it, huc.edu, and click around. We are in the process of doing a major website overhaul, so please save those comments that it needs it. We know it, and we're on top of it.
Glad to hear it. Thank you so much, Andrew.
You're welcome. Be well.
When we come back on Two Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out.
There's magic in the air at this special place for fun. A place where fortune smiles and Tucson comes alive. This is Casino del Sol. The best games in town. Amazing dining and top-flight entertainment. This is a heart that beats with excitement, with passion and beauty. It's all waiting for you at Casino del Sol. This is the soul of Tucson. Presenting sponsor of University of Arizona Basketball. Enterprise of the Pascua-Yaqui Tribe.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Two Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday. Our guest on Two Jewish will be Isaac Thangzom, a member of the B'nai Menashe Jews from India, discussing the extraordinary Jewish community in northeastern India and the dangerous effect on the COVID-19 pandemic on them and how, well, we can help. Our play out this morning is from Israel and the Idan Reichel Project, his popular song, Bowie. My friends, may you have a healthy week. God willing, a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
Stamet Ali Bay Gizel, Stato Tain, Stato Tix, Tawain, Sawain, Sinataka, Kanvakan Gizel, and Badestas and Nazalev. ቀኑ ሲመሽ መቼ ነው አዲስ ቀን የሚጀምረው በመባባል ስንለያይ ከፍቶኝ ስንገናኝ በጣም ደስታ የሚሰማኝ አሁን ያ ሁሉ አለፈና ከዚህ ደረስ ከዚህ ደረስ ከዚህ ደረስ
ቦይ ሚሊየት ፈነለህ አልዲሻሊ ኦቲለ አልዲሻሊ ኦቲ አል ኦሼ ኡላይ ከም ሁ ያልፎ ሸው ያልፎ ירד בלנו כמו גשם.
Sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.